Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Today, in Beijing's storied Tiananmen Square, the Olympic torch was formally passed to begin a global journey back for the Summer Games. Hein Verbruggen from the International Olympic Committee spoke at the ceremony.
All along the relay route, people will be touched by the magic of the Olympic Games and what it represents.
Touched perhaps as well by the protests that have already broken out, with more expected along the torch route. The Beijing Games are now just 130 days away, and if their politics are intensely serious in Tibet and Darfur and beyond, so too are their preparations intense in pools and on tracks around the world. This hour, On Point will talk with U.S. Olympic hopefuls about the home stretch push to the Summer Games. In a moment, we'll be joined by three Olympic hopefuls, one already named to the team. Joining us first from New York with an overview is Brian Kazanov. He's staff writer and Olympics guru at Sports Illustrated. He writes the Inside Olympics column and is co-author with swimmer Michael Phelps of Michael Phelps Beneath the Surface. Brian, thanks very much for being with us today.
Good to be here.
Place us just in the calendar first, if you would. The Olympics, August 8th, they kick off. So where are we in the big preparation parade going on?
Well, right now in this country, a lot of the Olympic trials are starting to kick in. They've already kicked in a few sports, and you'll be seeing a lot of Olympics coverage in the weeks and months leading up to the games when they choose athletes in sports like track and field and swimming and gymnastics and also some of the minor sports as well. In Beijing, as far as the facilities are concerned, they're already in great shape. I think the one thing that they wanted to avoid was any political turmoil leading up to the games. They're obviously trying to put a great face on these games as a sort of coming out party for a place that's already coming out, if you will. Because of what you referenced earlier in Tibet and Darfur, they've hit a bit of a bump in that respect. Soon enough, the games will be here. And in the month of August, the whole world will be focused on Beijing.
A little late to avoid political turmoil. Fascinating now to see how this plays out over the months ahead. We feel China's sensitivity about this. We know how much they've invested in these games, and yet these very hot political conversations are already well underway. When we were headed to Athens the last time for the Olympics, there was a lot of conversation about whether or not Athens would be ready in time. I take it from what you and others have written that there's no question this time about China's readiness.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic because there were a lot of problems with the venues leading up to the Athens games, as there have been with other Olympics, pre-Olympic events that were scheduled and had to be rescheduled, structural deficiencies that were discovered at the last minute, problems with allocating funds to get last-minute touch-ups done. In Beijing, it was ironic. The IOC, the International Olympic Committee, at one point told the organizers, hey, slow down. You have so much done already. You're adding to the cost by just having a basic upkeep of facilities that are already finished. So Beijing is certainly not lacking in terms of the infrastructure and the readiness in terms of facilities. That's something in which they're way ahead of the curve, and obviously having a centralized government that can sort of flip the switch on just about anything is a big help in that regard. Their issue right now in terms of the physical outlay of the games is the pollution that may affect some of the distance events like the marathon, the triathlon, road cycling. A lot of athletes in those outdoor distance events are concerned about that, and a lot of the organizers are saying, don't worry, we can shut down the factories whenever we need to. So that is more of a concern right now than the actual readiness of the venues, which have been in place for some time.
We're going to hear in just a moment from athletes preparing perhaps to deal with exactly those conditions. I'm looking here at a brand new interview with Joe Torre with the New York Yankees. They played an exhibition game in Beijing just this month, And Time Magazine asks him what he thinks about the pollution in the Olympics. And he says, it's pretty bad. I think it could really have an effect unless they clean it up. You could cut it with a knife, says Joe Torre. Is the Beijing government prepared to close down factories? Are they doing it already?
Well, that's interesting. If Joe Torre's talking about players cutting things with a knife when they're running hard 90 feet to first base, imagine what it's going to be like when you have to run 26 miles.
And of course, he's with the Dodgers now, not the Yankees. It's hard for me to keep up with him, even in that sprint. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the one thing though that the Chinese government has been pointing out is that, unlike here in the States or in many other places, where you sort of have to get some consensus on shutting down factories and so forth, they can put out the word and they can say, well, let's see, these emissions are going to stay in the air for this number of weeks, and therefore, if it's 6 weeks, then 6 weeks plus one day before the start of the games, we'll make sure that factory is shut down. I don't know whether that will have the effect that they claim it will have, but they claim to have done a number of tests. They claim some factories are already shut down and that more will be shut down when the games actually start. They've talked about having certain driving lanes where there will only be official Olympic vehicles allowed, that people around the exterior of the Olympic venues will not be allowed to have cars. They'll have to take public transportation. So at least on the face of it, they are saying that they will do whatever they have to do in order to reduce those emissions. I don't know whether that will be enough to curtail what's been circulating in the air for a place that's, basically is still in the middle of its industrial revolution.
And Brian, bring us home for just a moment. We're going to be talking with athletes in just a minute here. But in terms of where Olympic hopefuls, either those who have already, have a confirmed berth on the way to Beijing and those still hoping for it, where do they tend to be in their training now? Is there I know we're talking about a lot of different sports here, but is there a sort of curve or pattern to intensity? Are they maximizing now 5-plus months out, or are they still going to be stepping up as people move closer to final trials in the game? As athletes, where do they tend to be in their surge toward Beijing?
Well, it varies. I mean, a couple of the athletes who you'll be speaking to now, it varies very much for them. In the case of the gymnast you'll have on, Chelsea Memel, her Olympic trials are coming up in Philadelphia in a few months, so she has that. She has other competitions, and she has the various camps that the coaches hold in Houston. So her intensity level is going to have to pick up just for her to get onto the team. In the case of the triathlete, Jared, you'll be speaking to in a little while, he's already secured a berth on the team, so now he doesn't have to worry about that. He actually secured it in Beijing, so he can talk about the conditions there. And so for those particular athletes now, they're just sort of, getting ready and building up so that they can hit their peak at exactly the right times. Most of the sports have not yet had their Olympic trials or their national championships. So you're talking about athletes that basically have to peak for two events, their qualification or their Olympic trials, and then, after a bit of a taper, the Olympic Games themselves. Those are two very sort of scientific times in the training cycle, and that's typical of most years, because in most years you either have a World Championship or an Olympics, and then you have the qualification to get to them. So for most sports right now, they're peaking towards that first event, and that would be the Olympic trials.
We're going to hear from swimmer Rebecca Soni, from triathlete Jared Shoemaker, and, yes, from Chelsea Memel in this hour. We just got a minute before the break, but Chelsea Memel joins us right now from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 19-year-old gymnast. Favorites are bar and floor exercises, all kinds of prizes on her athletic resume, and she's looking to make that U.S. team in Beijing. Chelsea Memel, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
When does your big trial come? Philadelphia, what, in June, July?
June 19th through the 22nd is our trials.
So are you pouring on all the gas yet, or still holding something in reserve? Where are you in the big arc of your training, Chelsea?
We're starting, the climb towards getting ready to peak for, championships and trials and then the final selection camp.
And Philadelphia, June, it all happens there. You must be as focused as you've ever been as an athlete.
Yeah, definitely. The training has been, you know, getting a lot more intense. But, you know, I trained for the Olympics in 2004. It was a little bit different coming back from an injury. But this time, you know, I'm pretty much healthy right now, and it's different. It's a lot more intense.
We're going to come back and talk with you and others about exactly what's going on that path to Beijing in just a minute here. But, Brian, here's Chelsea with a whole lot of competition still ahead of her in Philadelphia and having to think about Beijing at the same time.
Well, sure, and she's in an unusual situation because the women's gymnastics team is about as deep as it has ever been. You know, 4 years ago, the all-around champion was from the United States, Carly Patterson, and people remember years before that what Mary Lou Retton did. But actually, there are several outstanding gymnasts in the women's program now. Chelsea herself was a world champion, but last year at the World Championships in Stuttgart, there were a number of other gymnasts who did very well for the United States. Shawn Johnson was the world all-around champion. Nastia Liukin is somebody else who was very close to Chelsea and at the World Championships a couple of years ago.
Brian, hold the thought there. And Chelsea Memble in Milwaukee. We're talking with U.S. athletes in the home stretch of their training for the Olympics. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with top U.S. athletes, all Olympic hopefuls, about their home stretch push to go to Beijing for the Summer Olympics. Let's just get a taste of what that is like when they arrive here from the 2004 Summer Games. Michael Phelps, the swimmer in Athens, striking gold first in the 400 individual medley. NBC's Dan Hicks and Rowdy Gaines had the call.
50 meters left here in the freestyle as he turns for home. He's going to get the Olympic gold medal. Will he get a world record? Again, 4:08.41, more than 11,000 on their feet, cheering them on. Bet was still in third, and Che is a solid second right now. Well, the crowd's starting to feel it. He was less than a half a second under world record pace into 3:50. He's going to be very close. Again, 4:08.41. Michael Phelps about ready to get his first Olympic medal. It's going to be gold, and it's going to be a new world record.
And that's it, where they all would like to be in the pool or out. Brian Kazanov is with us. He writes on the Olympics for Sports Illustrated magazine. We've already met Chelsea Memel, 19-year-old gymnast from Milwaukee. As you heard, a top prize winner all over the world who is lined up for the final trials for the U.S. gymnastics team in Philadelphia in June. I want to welcome into our conversation right now from the campus of the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, 21-year-old swimmer from Plainsboro, New Jersey, Rebecca Soni. She's a junior at USC. Rebecca, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, thank you very much.
So tell us what you're hoping to head to Beijing to defend. You're the defending NCAA champion in the 200-meter breaststroke. What are you hoping? How are you hoping to compete in Beijing, Rebecca?
Well, first off, the 100 and 200 breaststroke are my goal events, but we still have to get through trials.
And you've got your trials coming up in Omaha,
right.
Nebraska.
Yes, so, at the very end of June, beginning of July.
That's great. We'll hear more about that. With us from also from California, from Chula Vista, California, Jared Shoemaker is here. He's a triathlete originally from Sudbury, Massachusetts. Triathlete that, of course, is swimming, biking, and running all in one event. He's 25 years old, a graduate of Dartmouth College, out training right now at the U.S. Olympic Committee's Warm Weather Training Center in Chula Vista, California. Jared, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
So tell us where you are in your training right now. You've got a grueling trio right there. What's your daily routine like, Jared?
Yeah, pretty much every day we're doing at least three sports, sometimes adding in a weightlifting routine or a yoga class at the end of the day. But for me, it's been a great thing to have the spot already locked up because I've been able to go back and work on some of my weak things. Like my swimming is a little bit weaker, so I can go back and work hard on my swimming, knowing that on August 19th, which is my race, I'll be able to race faster.
So you're already locked in. You know you're headed for Beijing. When was that confirmed, and how, Jared?
We actually had our first Olympic qualifier on the Beijing World Cup course. It was September 16th last year. So the first American to cross the finish line in that race was going to the Olympics. And it was pretty tight. I was 11th place, and the next guy was 15th place and about 10 seconds behind me. So,
well, Rebecca Soni, give us a sense of your training now. In the course of a week, in a day, what are you doing as you pour it on for these final trials?
We pretty much swim twice a day, early in the morning and then also in the afternoon. Each session is about 2 hours, just get in the pool and do some drills, some racing. And then in addition to that, we do a weight room session about three times a week and some on-deck dry land also.
And Chelsea, what about yours? I'm thinking that gymnastics is maybe some fraction less endurance and more technique, though we know technique is absolutely critical in all of these. So is it physical conditioning or is it fine points of technique that you're focused on now?
It's definitely both right now since we're still, you know, getting up and getting all of our routines and everything. But we, you know, do strength and conditioning every day. We do some endurance training, but, you know, not a lot as, you know, runners and everything. But endurance is still definitely part of the sport when you're doing, like, the minute and a half floor routines. But, yeah, we work on everything. You know, the fine-tuning is always being worked on.
You've already been in Beijing to compete. What was that like? Was it in Olympic facilities or others? And how did you find conditions there?
All the facilities that we were in were very nice. We did compete in the arena that, you know, the Olympics will be held in. All the training gyms as well were very nice. The equipment was great. We don't deal too much with the pollution because we're not really outside at all. But there is, you know, definitely differences that you can see right when you get to China that their air quality isn't the greatest. But I really didn't have a problem, you know, adjusting to anything.
Jared Shoemaker, how about you as a triathlete? I mean, you qualified on September 16th. You've run and raced in Beijing. What's it like?
Yeah, it's actually the third time that I raced on that course. We've been lucky enough to have a World Cup there since 2005. So each year we've been there, and each year we've had to learn how to deal with the pollution. And honestly, it's pretty bad, and I think that Joe Torre hit it pretty head on when, I mean, you can taste it. It's got a distinct taste, and when you go there, you remember it when, you know, when you go back. So it's an issue, and I hope they clean it up, but it's something that the U.S. Olympic Committee sports science staff has been working with us on, and this past year we actually wore masks when we were there, and so I'm hoping that it won't be a problem when we get there, but you know, you have to develop a contingency plan just in case.
I'm reading here a quote from you where you say it's like running behind the tailpipe of a car. Brian Kazanov, what kind of measures is the U.S. Olympic Committee taking to help athletes deal with it? I mean, we know Beijing is working hard on cleaning it up, but it's a lot to clean up.
Well, I mean, as Jared mentioned, the idea that they would be able to have masks there. Most of the U.S. athletes are actually not going to be staying at the main Olympic Village. They will have their own off-site preparation and training center when they get to China. And that will help a little bit because, you know, they'll have things like, you know, medical personnel there and their own food. And in terms of the pollution, again, they'll have the masks there. I think most of the athletes are actually getting there only a couple of weeks before the actual games, though. Initially, there was some thought that maybe the athletes might prepare for the pollution by actually spending more time in it. But I think a lot of the sports science people felt that that wasn't a good idea. So they'll be getting there pretty close to the actual times of the games. And then, as I said, have their own separate facilities where they can, you know, be tended to by a lot of U.S. OC personnel.
I'm reading here the exercise physiologist for the U.S. OC urging athletes to wear masks over their nose and mouth from the minute they step foot in Beijing. Is that really going to happen? Brian?
Well, I mean, that they will have them over there. There was a little bit of a thought that there was a political sensitivity involved that they didn't want to
get off the planes with masks on.
Yeah, they didn't want to be seen as rude guests,
yeah.
as people who would be, pointing out the fact that there was pollution in the air because they'd be wearing these masks. And that's one of the advantages of having this off-site training area where they don't have to be, let's say, out in public. One of the things about the Olympic Village and a lot of the other, training sites is that there are a lot of cameras around, and you can suddenly end up on the front page of a newspaper, wearing a mask, and then by association saying, well, we don't like it here because there's so much pollution. The masks are things that other teams are bringing as well. The British team is bringing some, the Canadian team, different sports teams from individual countries are bringing them. I think eventually it won't be that big a deal because a lot of teams will have them there. But again, having this off-site facility will allow the sports medicine people, the psychologists, the physiologists to deal on a one-to-one basis with the athlete.
Sensitivities on a lot of fronts here. We've got listeners who want to speak with all of you, athletes included. Williamsburg, Virginia is calling in. David. Hi, David. You're on the air with our Olympic hopefuls.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I have a question for the athletes. Professional athletes have to be in preparation year-round, and it becomes a part of their life. But I'm curious for the Olympic athletes who are preparing for one specific short period of time. What does that do to the rest of their life?
Rebecca Soni, how about it? Is there a rest of your life when you're in preparation for something like this?
Well, since I'm not really considered, I'm still in college, so I'm not considered professional. So I still have to deal with the school aspect of life and. For me, there definitely is, and there's still some other meets to go through, so it's not like that's it is my main focus, but it's not the only thing that I have to think about every day.
But when you think about the hours in the day that you're devoting here, I mean, do you still keep up with classes? Do you still do all of that, even in this final stretch?
School's going to end in a month or two, so after that, we'll focus more on training, but until then, I've been doing school and swimming for a long time, so it's not really something unusual.
Chelsea Bimmel, how about yourself? You've taken a break from school to do your preparation for gymnastics and the Olympics. Does that mean the Olympics have essentially, your effort to go has essentially sort of swallowed up your life?
It's definitely, the biggest part of my life and my main focus, and I did take off college to keep training, and it was a decision for me, and I thought it was, right for my situation because we do train twice a day, almost every day, and then, with going to therapies and having appointments and stuff like that. It's very consuming part of my life, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Your parents were both All-American gymnasts. Your father is your coach. That would seem to make it pretty well swamp your surroundings when you live in that sort of full gymnastics bubble, huh?
We're definitely a gymnastics family. All my, both my younger sisters are involved in it. And, my parents were college athletes. But that's, all I've really ever known. And I'm still not sick of it. I still love it.
Well, a lot still ahead. Let's take another call here from Boston and Jacob. Jacob, you're on the air.
Hi there, Tom. My cousin is a professional beach volleyball player who's tried to qualify for the Olympic team several times, so I know how hard you have to train and the pressure you're under. But I was just wondering how China's human rights issues affect your zest and preparations for the Games. Would you prefer if they were held elsewhere?
Jared Shoemaker, how about it? Just in the last couple of weeks, I mean, China's already been, there's already been a lot of talk about this. Steven Spielberg stepped away from his role in helping plan the opening ceremonies there. A lot of talk about Darfur and China, and then Tibet burst on the scene recently. As an athlete, where does all of that lie in your mind as we move toward the Games?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question, and one that a lot of athletes have to worry about and wrestle with. Obviously, human rights issues are a very, very big part of the entire world and what's going on right now. I mean, the crisis in Darfur and Tibet, it's not good. But at the same time, I think the ultimate goal of the Olympics is to step away from some of that. But by having the Olympics in China, it has brought a light to what is going on there. Now, as an athlete, I don't want to boycott anything, because this is kind of my time as an athlete to step forward and show how good I am. But I do think that it is good that the Olympics are in China, because it is shining a light on what's been going on there. And I don't think it's very different from some of the other Olympics that we've had. I mean, we boycotted the Olympics when they were in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of the same issues were going on then. And I think that we've learned from that, and I think that was a mistake to do that back then. But, I mean, I'm a member of Team Darfur, which ultimately the reason I signed up for Team Darfur was...
What is that, Jared?
It's basically we are trying to promote awareness of what's going on in Darfur. And, I mean, I'm not going to make any political statements when I'm at the Games. Because when I'm at the Games, mm-hmm. my goal is to win a gold medal for the U.S. Mm-hmm. But I do think it is important as an athlete to, you know, use your position as a role model to, you know, show people what is going on and what you do believe in. And, I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff. I was a history major in college, so I wrote papers on the Rwandan genocide and, you know, studied World War II. Mm-hmm. And I think it's always good when you have an opportunity to shine a light on something and show what's going on. So
interesting perspective that maybe the Olympics themselves end up spotlighting issues, perhaps not exactly what China wanted entirely, but usefully from your perspective.
Yes, I totally agree. And, I mean, honestly, it is going to make a huge difference when, you know, what happens in the next couple months leading up to the Games. I hope that nobody boycotts opening ceremonies, because I just don't think that's the right thing to do, because I think it hurts the athletes.
Rebecca Soni, how about your view on this? Do the politics live in your mind as you're swimming all those laps, or do you block them out? And is that in another world from your preparation?
I guess you could say it is another world, and I do try to block it out, because for me it's the Olympics. I feel it's the point of the Olympics is to forget all the problems in the world and focus on the world itself and the people of the world. So for me it's not really that important. I mean, it's going on, and it is important to see it. But as far as my preparations go and my thoughts of the Olympics, it's not really what's on my mind.
Chelsea, how about you? Do you seal it out, or is it part of what you're thinking about as you prepare for the Games?
I, too, definitely try to seal it out and just focus on my training. You know, there are stuff going on outside your sport, but at the same time, you need to focus on what you're going to do and what your goals are.
Well, that's some picture to confront, Brian. You talk with a lot of athletes, and hear the headlines, hear the TV images, and yet right in front of them, this big personal challenge. It's going to take most of what they've got. Do you have a general sense, Brian, of where this lives in the athletes' conversation about the Games, the politics?
Well, you know, politics are certainly not new to the Games, and I think because we're in a more commercial era now than we've been in the past, you're going to see some athletes being very cautious about statements that they, you know, they may or may not choose to make. I think Jared made a terrific point about the fact that the Games being held in Beijing is sort of shining a spotlight on the Darfur and Tibet issues. In the past, that has happened at other Olympics. In 1956, for example, Soviet tanks were running through Hungary at the time that there was a very violent water polo game between the Soviets and the Hungarians.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with top U.S. athletes, all Olympic hopefuls, about their home stretch push to go to Beijing and win. Three top competitors with us, all with their sights set on the Summer Games. Chelsea Memel joins us from Milwaukee, 19-year-old gymnast on on her way, she hopes. Final trials coming up to the games in Beijing. Rebecca Soni is with us from USC in Los Angeles, junior at USC, 21-year-old swimmer, had minor heart surgery just a couple of years back. There's a story for you. And now she hopes, headed for those Olympic Games. And Jared Shoemaker, triathlete, joins us from Chula Vista, California, in the warm weather U.S. Olympic Trainings Center there, originally from Sudbury, Massachusetts. He's already confirmed on his way to China for the triathlete competition there. Brian Kazanoff is with us from Sports Illustrated as well. Right now, Peter's calling from Hanover, New Hampshire. Peter, you're on the air.
Well, thank you very much, Tom. It's a great show, really compelling. I sort of wanted to ask Brian his thoughts, having worked at 8 Olympics as either a TV or public address announcer. The days of like Eddie the Eagle in Calgary are kind of done now, I think.
What do you mean by that, Peter? That you mean the kind of cartoon character?
Yeah, the ski jumper who was most famous for being last place up there. He was a very colorful guy and got a lot of exposure for the sport of jumping. But I think some of the international federations now have really bumped up the standard, so it's a bit harder to make the Olympic team currently, I think, and that may be a good thing.
Is it not always hard to make the Olympic team? We have a sense that that's the ultimate anywhere.
It's always hard to make the Olympic team, but it depends what country you're from. When I'm speaking about Eddie the Eagle, mm-hmm. the Brits did not have but one ski jumper at the time.
This is sort of an amateur, goofy ski jumper from the Britain, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was going to particularly ask Brian if he thought those days were done. And secondly, I was sort of curious what Brian's thoughts on the role of television in the modern Olympiad have become.
Brian Kazanoff?
Well, he's correct in the sense that most of the federations have sort of tightened the standards to getting into the Olympics. And there's really a sort of gradation system. Basically, the fewer athletes you have in the fewer sports, the easier they make it for an athlete, a token athlete from a particular nation, to participate in the games. So even though it's harder for an Eddie the Eagle to materialize, you still may see one. There was a swimmer who was famous for, you know, practically drowning, Eric Musambani, a couple of years ago, and he took a couple of minutes to get from one end of the pool to the other. As far as television goes, it's interesting because, you know, they've really affected, for example, the swimming competition. Typically, in years past, they've had preliminaries in the morning and finals at night. But in order to placate NBC, which paid all this money to have the rights to host the games in the United States, the Beijing organizers have flipped their schedules. Their finals are taking place in the morning Beijing time, and therefore they would be in the evening in prime time in the United States. And I'm curious as to how our swimmer feels that will impact her, because that's being done specifically because of television.
Rebecca Soni, how about it? We hope that you're right there in Beijing to participate in exactly that. Do you care what time of day all that happens because of television?
It's not something I've experienced before, the finals in the morning. Usually it's an afternoon or night kind of thing when you swim finals, so that's something that I'm going to have to get used to. And I've gotten used to it. This news has been out for a while, so everyone that is trying to make the team knows this going into it, and I think that's helpful also. But it is a little bit frustrating to change your whole routine just for television and for viewers of NBC and in America.
Right. Of course, if you're going to do it on the other side of the planet and everybody's at work in the morning and home in the evening ready to watch you compete, well, what are you going to do?
I don't know why. Like I said before, it's not a situation I've been in before, but hopefully it won't be as difficult as it seems right now. It might also help that our bodies might still be in the time zone of United States, mm-hmm. just so that it could. That might also kind of help to swim fast in the morning as opposed to night.
Brian, on TV, there was also talk that the government in Beijing might be concerned about images out of Tiananmen Square, which NBC was hoping to use prominently because it's so well known globally. But of course, going back to '89, also has strong political connotations. Do you know how that settled out? Will they be barred from broadcasting from Tiananmen or not?
Well, they won't be barred necessarily, although it's interesting, a lot of the websites that come out of China look very different in China than they do in the United States. If you punch in Tiananmen Square over here, you can see a lot of images about what we know took place there. If you punch in Tiananmen Square over there, you see a lot of flowers. You see a lot of favorable signs. You see kids playing music. You're not going to see the same things over here as you are over there. I think the interesting question is, what happens when a journalist, and there will be somebody, it won't be me, but it'll be somebody, decides to do a man-on-the-street story around Tiananmen Square? How do they handle that sort of thing? Obviously, they can control the coverage that takes place within their country, but what happens when some of the journalists start to get aggressive in asking the common citizens about what happened for consumption around the world? It'd be interesting to see how they handle that.
If they find a Chinese citizen prepared to speak up and speak candidly to that with cameras rolling, yes, it will. Let's get a call from Virginia Beach, Virginia, and Natter. Natter, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom. I had a question for the athletes in regards to the Summer Olympics. It brings out a lot of sports that we don't have professionally, majorly here in the U.S. I think about the NBA and professional basketball, but I feel like the only times we see gymnastics or swimming is whenever there's a world championship or whenever there's an Olympics. And I wanted to get the athlete's perspective and how that affects their training and with not as many sponsors, not as much attention from the public unless somebody's actively involved in the sport. How it affects your preparation, how it affects your mindset, and the funding and things.
Yeah, it's a great question. A moment here where sports get their time in the sun that don't have such public attention professionally. Natter, thanks for that. You know, to look at that, I've got one more voice to join us here from New York. We're joined by Emily Cross. She's a 21-year-old fencer, 2005 NCAA individual champion. Emily Cross joins us. Emily, thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You represent one of those sports that doesn't exactly get a lot of time compared to the NBA or football or professional baseball in this country. What does it mean to you to see your moment in the sun when fencers pick up their épées and sabers and all the rest and go to the Olympics?
Well, it's certainly very exciting to get some media coverage. We really don't get too much of it on a normal basis. I think a lot of it has to do with our sport has a lot of complicated rules, which are difficult for a first-time viewer to pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
After the 2004 Olympic Games, when we had a women's saber, United States fencer, Marielle Zagunas, who won the gold medal, and also Sadis Jacobson, who won the bronze, and then the team won the gold medal also. We've gotten a lot more coverage after that. So I think we are sort of starting to move into the kind of eye of the media a little bit more. But I've never been to an Olympic Games or really any event that had a lot of media coverage, so it's going to be exciting to see what that's going to be like.
You're a junior at Harvard. You've taken some time off. You're headed to Portland, Oregon, the end of April for the finals and to decide what the U.S. team will look like. What about your material preparations for that, Emily? Describe for us the kind of training you're in now as a fencer.
Well, recently we've been traveling around for several international tournaments. Our qualification period lasts for a really long time, so we've been mostly just working on peaking for our competitions and then trying to recover in between. From February through the end of March, we actually just got back from our last World Cup this weekend in France. We pretty much had a competition every weekend in a different European country. So this recent portion of the season has been mostly focused on competing. But in general, I try to do some sort of cardio workout in the mornings, and then I train in the evenings at my club in New York City. I take lessons and train with my teammates who live in New York.
And train. Emily, let me ask you, because you've been at all these events recently where you'll be with not just American athletes, but athletes from all around the world, what about the political conversation, hot conversation, going on around these Olympics. How do you bear that in mind even as you prepare for the Games?
Well, I can't say that we've been focusing on it all that much. The international scene in fencing, it's a very small sport, so everyone knows each other very well. You know, we've formed a lot of friendships with other teams and things like that, so we really don't, there's not a lot of focus on kind of the divisions between countries or, you know, any real political events that are going on, and especially in such an intense...
But you're a junior at Harvard, so as a person, you know what's going on out there. Do you inhabit two different minds, sort of your athlete mind and the rest, or not?
Well, I try to kind of keep my personal views and awareness of what's going on separate from the competition. I mean, at this point, it's really just important to focus on the tournament and performing well and qualifying for the Olympics.
Mm. Emily, good luck with that. Thank you very much
for joining us.
Emily Cross, 21-year-old fencer, working on her way forward in New York City right now. Jared Shoemaker, you mentioned earlier, if memory serves, that yoga was part of your prep for the triathlete competition. How does yoga figure in?
Yeah, it's interesting. We got into yoga a little while ago, and basically it helps loosen up the body and relax the mind. I think after a hard day of training with running, cycling, and swimming, everything seems to tighten up, so it's nice to just be able to relax and unwind. And it's kind of a little bit of peace where you can, you know, step outside of that real hard training and just let your body relax.
Mm. And Chelsea, we heard Emily talking there about peaking for competition. You must be very aware of what that takes in dietary terms. I mean, is peaking for the Olympics any different than trying to have yourself peak mentally and physically for any other competition?
Well, definitely you want to be at your, you know, very, very best that you can be for the Olympics, but that doesn't mean you're not going to want to be the best that you can for any other competition that you're in. But I know, like, for me, definitely want to be, again, like, the best that I can be during the Olympic Games, but the competitions heading up to it, I want to be, you know, maybe just one step, like, behind, but again, you just always want to be at the top of your game for competitions.
Brian Kasanoff, what about the U.S. team overall? We don't know exactly who will be on it this year. We hope that everybody with us today is on their way to the Games. But, you know, inevitably the sort of national medal count questions come into play when it's Olympics. That nationalism and competition gets going. What does it look like for the U.S. this year?
Well, I think in most of the key sports, it's a very strong team, but the host nation, no matter what the nation is, always seems to have a bump up in medals, whether it was the Greeks, the Spaniards, the Koreans, the other nations that have recently held Olympic Games. Not in the last few Olympics has the U.S. team faced the type of challenge that it will face from this particular host, because the Chinese have been steadily moving up in the medal count, and you know that they would love to win it. And so not only the sports in which they've been traditionally strong, such as diving and table tennis and gymnastics, for example, but in some of the other sports where maybe they've had only one or two competitors, it'll be interesting to see just how much of a challenge they provide for the U.S. team, the Russian team, and the other traditionally strong teams. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a good race in the medal count between the United States and China.
Jared, I wonder how you look at this question of competition, whether it's personal or do you feel yourself preparing to compete as an American in particular? Is it a national thing? How do you look at it in this day and age when we've got national politics and we've got global issues?
That's a great question. I think Emily put it well in that we travel and race with all of our other competitors. And, I mean, I know them all very well. I'm friends with a bunch of Canadians. My wife is actually a Canadian. So we know all the other competitors that we're racing against. But every time we get on the start line, it still says USA on our jersey, whether it's a World Cup, whether it's a Continental Cup, which is a smaller race, or when we're going to the Olympics. So I think there's always a sense of national pride in that, you know, you want to be the first American in a race. You know, you want to beat certain other countries. And I think it definitely takes a next step from world championships to Olympics. And I'm very honored to represent the country at the Olympics.
Well, we know you'll be doing that, and Rebecca and Chelsea, we hope you'll be doing that, and we know those trials are coming right up soon. We wish you very good luck with your training and with your competition there, and hope you do end up under the big top in August 8 to 24, when the Summer Olympics get underway. I want to thank all of you for being with us today. Chelsea Memel, 19-year-old gymnast in Milwaukee, Wisconsin today. Chelsea, we wish you good luck, and go get him. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Rebecca Soni, who joined us today from the University of Southern California in Los Angeles, 21-year-old swimmer there, junior at USC, all kinds of trophies on her shelf. And Rebecca, we hope that some Olympic gold or you name the color will join that. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks a lot.
And Jared Shoemaker, today with us from Chula Vista, California, originally of Sudbury, Mass. Jared, good luck with your big triathlete competition there. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Brian Kazanov at Sports Illustrated. Hope we can talk again as the Olympics come closer, and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Hilary McQuilkin, Chelsea Mers, Tanya Raleigh, James Ross, Karen Schiffman, and John Wibby, with help from Jamie Katsoufis and Ping Huang. Our senior producer is Wen Stevenson. We'll be on the road to China soon, and we'll hear more about the Olympics then from Shanghai in just a couple weeks. Join us for that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.